Desperado. Hey, it's the news. According to me. Well, good morning. It is, what is this, Wednesday, October 16th, 7:58 a.m. It's not as early as I thought it would be. I was planning on it. I actually woke up at about 5:53 this morning. I plan on coming down here to do this show here at the home studio. I didn't make it to the worldwide headquarters this morning. I don't think that's going to happen because I got to leave the house here. Well, about 2 hours, I guess. And that's going to be a little tough because I haven't even begun to get ready to go yet. Lots of things to deal with. So I've got, dust distractor. Extractor. Interesting. Looks like an interesting little outfit. We have in my cup. Let's just talk about my cup here this morning. I've got chai with the last of my coconut creamer in it, which is not really creamer because it's nowhere on the container does it say keep refrigerated. It's all artificial flavoring, which I assume everything's artificial, probably made by Monsanto, probably. And it doesn't even taste that good. It's you know, better than nothing, I guess. I don't know. My body didn't probably, there's probably cells in my body right now going, what are you doing down there, up there? What are you thinking? And of course, in my backup, always have a backup. It's my homemade sweet tea with peaches in it. I have, which I have about another quart left of that. I'm going to be taking it with me. Most of it with me on this little trip I'm going on. I might be around tomorrow morning. I'm not sure exactly how this is going to work. I've got some things to do in Chicago. Not sure how it's all going to work out, but it's, we'll just have to see how it goes. I have a concern, and I was going to do some other things this morning, but seeing how we are, there's a lot of kerfuffle going on the left. Now the party, the Democrat Party, I think is in disarray behind the scenes. And it's interesting because I think they're still fooling themselves. They're still kidding themselves. They've always done this. They did this. They haven't learned anything from 2016, apparently. Or from, 2000 or any other time. What they've done is they're ignoring the facts. They get in their little bubbles. They get in their little silos, whatever you call it. They're in the bunker, and they're all cheering each other on with all their little, saying the same thing about the same thing. It's just... Kamala goes on a talk show where there's, 99% of the people there are, totally in the tank for, big fans of hers or big fans of the show or whatever it is. Something like Stephen Colbert, who I remember right after Kamala came out, within a week after she came out as the nominee on the left. And then all of a sudden, there was a poll that said something about 54-50. So it was a 4% difference. It said she was up by 4%, which is pretty much just 1% in terms of, Trump algorithms, because he always outperforms his polls by 3-5%, which means he was really kind of a dead heat then. And he made this big remark. He said, "It's over," and he starts dancing around and doing his little prancing thing. And said, he thought Kamala was going to win this thing and walk away with it. That has not been the case now, by the way. It's not worked out that well. Kamala's little honeymoon time is over, and the reality of who she is starting to sink in. And the left is in panic mode right now. And my biggest concern, and this is where I think things get a little crazy, desperate people do desperate things. And that concerns me because we have a group of individuals who are getting very desperate. One of the things Steve Crowder says, he says they, you know, they lie, cheat. If the lying isn't working, and they continue to purport the lies, continue to keep the thing rolling. If that's not getting any traction, any momentum, which is not anymore, people are weary of the whole thing about Orange Man Bad. They don't even know what story to go with anymore. If that's not working, they're going to cheat. Now he's got some kind of a, he claims he's got some kind of large array of people who are going to capture this, that any kind of cheating that's going on. They're not necessarily going to do one thing. They're not putting all their eggs in one basket as far as the steal or the cheat goes. It's going to be overwhelming. We have to say that this election has to be won in an overwhelming margin, or it will not be possible to overcome it. And the reason they can't, it becomes so obvious. Now, I thought in 2020, I thought it was so pretty obvious because we had more people voting than we did registered voters, which has never in the history of this country ever happened. You don't get a 100% electorate registered voters in any election. This never happens. And yet all of a sudden it happened in the 2020 election. In fact, more showed up to vote than were registered to vote. And of course, the election was really only won by about 40,000 votes in terms of the Electoral College. Now, Trump is on tune right now to win the popular vote. It's basically a dead heat right now in terms of popular voting, the national polls. Now, as I have said before, they always manipulate the polls. They have what they call puff polls. I'm not sure where that term comes from. And those are polls that they just take because they want to make it look like their candidate is winning. Nobody wants to donate money to a candidate that's losing. First candidate I ever donated to was to Ron Paul back in, I think it was it 2000? Might have been 2000, actually. I don't know, maybe it wasn't 2000. It must have been 2004, 2008. It must have been 2008. I don't know. Whenever he was running, I think he was running against McCain or somebody. But I don't think it was 2008 because it was, I was still living in, I was living in a different house at that time. First time I ever donated to a candidate. And I really, the reason I donated to him is because I had learned so much about liberty and the Constitution. I mean, he was educating me on what it meant, what the founding fathers intended. It wasn't just a party, carrying water for the party thing. It was more of a true conservative libertarian ideal that was founded on, and he was more of a constitutionalist than he was a libertarian, which he always struggled with trying to find his place in that party. It just wasn't, Libertarian Party is a mess. And so that's where my ideologies that I have. Now, I don't agree with everything Ron Paul says, and I don't like some of the foreign policy issues. I think are a little bit of a problem. However, I'm more in touch with those and I understand where this non-interventionist stuff and all that, and I am all for that. But I think there's also some responsibility we have in some areas. I think we have to negotiate and be like he says, we have to be willing to have trade with them and negotiate with them and not be closed. We're not a closed society, but we also need to be careful with our. What's ironic is Bill Clinton was out talking about how we need these He made some big blunders when he on the campaign trail. He was talking about Lincoln Riley that got murdered by an immigrant who shouldn't have been here. He was a criminal to begin with. I believe he'd been captured and then released a couple times, or I understand. And ended up killing Lincoln Riley. Well, he made the comment about that. So, this immigrant killed somebody. Well, that person would have been vetted. And then he blamed it on, and I talked about this yesterday. He said, if that person would have been properly vetted, because the Republicans voted against this border bill, she might, the border bill came out after, the vote for the border bill came out after Lincoln Riley. The guy was already here. He was already here long before the border bill was introduced to the House. The guy wouldn't have been in the country if Donald Trump had been president, because his policies wouldn't have been here. Can't stop all murders. And they try to excuse this kind of stuff. Well, they're even there's because there's a percentage of people that are U.S. citizens who kill people too. That's not the point. The point is somebody was killed by somebody who shouldn't have been here. These are the people who say, if we can save just one life, we can just save just one child. And then he makes this ironic comment about how we need these people to come here and work because, we aren't having as many babies. Well, gee, maybe if we stopped aborting so many. Do you see where this is going? These supposedly unwanted children. So now we have to have migrants come in and take their place. And yet we talk about overpopulation. Oh, it's about overpopulation. It's terrible. It's overpopulation. These people are, the hypocrisy goes to the bone, these people. Maybe if we weren't, if you look at all the people who've been killed in the womb over the last 20, 30 years, how many more people we would have in this country? We wouldn't have to have any immigration to fulfill the jobs that we need to have fulfilled here. People aren't having as many babies. Well, that's because they're killing them before they get to have them. And you're fighting for the right to do that. You think it's just great. My reproductive rights. Yeah. They're getting desperate. And my understanding is there's even a group of people among the chatter is that there's a group of people behind the scenes now that even want to replace Kamala now. Now, they can't do that. I'm not saying they can't. It'd be very difficult to do that at this point because early voting has actually started already. We're in voting season now. So people have actually cast their votes, and of course you don't want to change that because now that messes up a whole bunch of things. Now you've disenfranchised a bunch of people. Now, the problem is that they're running into is that the deep state could do something to eliminate her, and of course they would probably blame. I just don't. I don't count anything out with these people. They're getting desperate. Like I said, they will do desperate things. They react. They don't respond to anything. People who are desperate, I've done a lot of training, a lot of different types of training in my life, with everything from self-defense to flight training. I was a flight instructor. I was a scuba instructor, a karate instructor, all these different things. One of the things that I've learned is that, and as I've observed people over time, is that no one that I've never heard someone say after some kind of event, after some kind of traumatic thing that happened to them, I've never heard them come back and say, I'm so glad I panicked in that situation. That's what saved my life. Never heard anybody say that. Focus on what you have to do in front of you at the moment, even if your shirt is on fire. You don't lose your focus on what needs to be done at the moment. You're not doing any good by panicking. The same thing goes with complaining. I, I've I was in a situation once that this guy, we had a, I was doing an instructional situation, and then we had some equipment that we were using, and the equipment wasn't working properly, and I was trying to reset some things, and I was working on it, and this guy was pacing around behind me, talking about how useless this piece of equipment is, and how it's just a toy, and blah, 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 and it's not, you know, they shouldn't even be using this, and blah, 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 blah. Now, it was far more advanced than anything we'd ever had before. You know, we used to use a poster on a wall, and now we have, you know, this computer screen thing that was simulated a whole bunch of different things. And he didn't like it. He thought it was a toy. He thought it was, you know, worthless. And he's just going to go back and forth, talking. I let him do that for about 5 minutes. And meantime, I'm trying to focus on what's going on with this thing. And he's back there distracting me. And I finally stopped him. And he was in a position to be a leader. This was a leadership training thing going through. I stopped him and I said, you know, nothing you are doing right now is helping the situation. In fact, everybody around you is being brought down by what you're doing. As a group leader, your attitude will spill off into everybody else around you. You will set a tone. And if that tone is to complain, then you've got to deal with working with those people. You've got a team that's going to be complaining the whole time, and eventually they're going to complain about you. But in the meantime, the job's not getting done because nothing you're doing is helping the situation move forward. And that's exactly what happened right at that moment. It was just this extreme silence. He stopped in his tracks and he's like, there was nothing. It was just a surreal moment. And I could tell the bells and whistles were going off in his head. And he said, you know, what can I do to help? So so I sat him down and gave him some things to do. We worked on it together and got it done. But it was eye-opening for myself as well, because it was just one of those moments that I'll never forget, because it was, you know, I guess I kind of took that kind of attitude for granted. You move forward, you keep working on it. You don't just sit and complain. It doesn't get you anywhere. When I was a younger kid, I was a flight instructor. Remember, this is very, very bad. I was working in this position where I was kind of working under the umbrella of another company. And I was looking for flying jobs. And this is back in the 90s. It was very hard to find a flying job back then. It was, these weren't, you know, airlines weren't hiring like crazy. And there's only so many seats in the community where there was airplane seats. And so I was looking for work, and I was trying to knock on doors and trying to find a job somewhere. And I wasn't able to find a job. So I ended up, I got my instructor license, and I was teaching, and I was trying to find an instructor job. Of course, I couldn't find much for that either. So I eventually ended up buying my own little airplane, half with a credit card and half with some cash that I'd sold some things. And I started doing some instruction, and realized, you know, if I'm going to make it in this thing, I'm just going to have to go out and do my own. I've got to make my own job here. I've got to build my time and flight time. I got to do something on my own to make this happen. So I started a little flight school. I started teaching people how to fly. Eventually had, you know, two airplanes, and then I had eight airplanes, a couple of different instructors working for me. Built the thing up like crazy really quickly. And it was, you know, I built up a lot of flight time. And in the meantime, I saw people around me who were still looking for that dream job, still looking for that job. Now, some of them got it. Some of them made it. Some of them got the job they were looking for because they were kissing the right feet. And they, oddly enough, I come to think of it, most of those people aren't even in aviation anymore. But it's one of those things where they They were simply depending on somebody else, you know, to fill out, to sign their paycheck, I guess is what I'm saying. And I've never been one to sit around like that. I've sat around. There have been times when, a business fails, you go through this major downtime. It's a crash when you go through a failing business or have trouble getting a business off the ground or whatever it is you're trying to do, and you get frustrated, and it can be very demeaning and humiliating and just dejected kind of feelings go on here. And it's tough. I could probably do a podcast just on, dealing with business failure. I've had several of them not make it. A few that have. It's great when things are successful. It is really devastating and just demoralizing when you pour your heart and soul into something and it doesn't make it. But it's at the same time, we have you don't stop there. You continue to go. You have to keep moving forward. At some point, and eventually things pay off. Now, everybody, the left has gone after Donald Trump, saying that he got handed $400 million on a silver platter, and he went through bankruptcy six times or whatever it was. Folks, everybody that I know who's been a billionaire or millionaire, billionaire, big business people, all of them, very, 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 very few of them who are really big on the world stage and have actually made it somewhere, very few of them have never gone through bankruptcy. When I was flying, I was doing a lot of corporate flying at a time when, back in the 90s, even after that, even in the 2000s, it allowed me to rub shoulders with, these people who own airplanes, they own jets, they own, King Airs, turboprops, whatever they have, corporate airplanes. That's usually a sideline. It's not. They don't. The business. The plane isn't making the money. It's just the plane is there for them to get around. It's like a time machine. They can travel faster. They can get their job done quicker. They can do things. And it's a tool for them to use. And typically, when you buy an airplane, the value, if you take care of it, the value stays there. Sometimes it goes up in value. It's not a bad investment necessarily. Especially if you have, time crunch, critical type things you're dealing with. And in the meantime, I was able to rub elbows with some of these people and hear what was going on and see what was going on in their lives. Most of them, in one way or another, you would find out that they had gone through bankruptcy at one time or another. One of them was a major trucking company. You would recognize the name if I told you. Major freight company in this country. And I would fly their airplane for him occasionally. He was an owner, started with nothing. He was on food stamps, living on food stamps. He had two little boys. And he named his company kind of after the boys, but he started with nothing, had one truck. And now he's a national trucking company. I think he has passed away. I believe. I don't think he's living with us anymore. I don't think. His boys are running the show now. But he'd gone through bankruptcy at one point. Reorganization. It wasn't a total, so whatever that is, Chapter 7 or Chapter 11, whichever one it is. But that you have to do that occasionally. That's what it's there for. Doesn't mean you're stupid. Doesn't mean you failed at anything necessarily. Whether it's economic problems, certain decisions other people have made for you. One of my businesses, it was failed because of decisions other people made. My suppliers were not supplying me with things that I had requested. I was being deceived. And then it got hit with the economy being bad. This was in 2008. And that just undermined everything. Just pulled the rug out from everything. There's a lot of people who were starting up businesses in 2019, 2018, 2019, and then 2020 rolls around, and they're done. They had no choices anymore. So just saying, this is kind of life story stuff, but I'm just saying, let's go back to this whole thing about desperation. I don't want to talk about all of the possibilities that the scenarios that I run through my head. Now, this is one of the things it's basically critical thinking. One of the things I've been trained to do in almost everything I've been involved in, whether it was scuba diving, whether it was self-defense, whether it was aviation, even in music performance, doing things in that respect. There are things that you one of the things that I think that stuck with me that Yeager talked about, the pilot, Yeager, Chuck Yeager, man who broke the speed of sound, that guy. He was kind of a jerk, but he one of the things he said was, you always want to have a way out. When you're in a military conflict, when you're flying, when you're, no matter what you're doing, you want to have some kind of contingency. You're always thinking about, okay, if this happens, I'm going to do that. If this breaks, quits, something goes haywire here, I've got this way out to get out of it. Always have a way out. It doesn't always happen that way. You don't always have that choice. And sometimes the way out is has no other alternative. So one of the things we would do in aviation is when you're setting up for an approach, you talk about your go around. What if the approach goes bad and things happen and we have to do a go around? Well, we're going to do this and we're going to go around. What if you lose an engine on the go around? What if you strike a bird in one of the engines, you know, as you're doing the go around, because you're low to the ground, there's birds flying around down there, and you hit a goose at that time, you become Sully, and the Hudson's nowhere around to land on, so you got to do something else. So your engine's in the middle of this whole thing, and you lose an engine. Well, where are you going to go? What are you going to do at that point? What's going to be your procedure in the event of that happening? Now, you don't usually talk about a two-engine failure, because then you're so limited by what you can do that you're just going to do whatever you have to do to get the plane to the ground just safely. You're just going to maintain best glide speed and hope for the best. You look for the best place to land, and then you put it in there. Well, that was, I guess, the dog had some, yeah, he agrees. So you always want to have these contingencies. You're always critically thinking. So I think that's what we're, even in self-defense situations. Okay, if this person does this, I'm going to do that. And if that's not going to work, I've got this way out. Is there any other way I can get out of the situation without any kind of, without escalating the conflict? And so there's scuba diving, same thing. You have a backup regulator. You have all these other things. Okay, I'm going to dive down in this particular area. If we get separated, if we get lost, this is what we're going to do. This is going to be our touch point. This is going to be our gathering point. Or if we lose each other, we go to that point over there. That's where we're going to find each other. Whatever it is. So I'm looking at this whole situation that we're facing right now with the potential of Donald Trump winning this election. If Kamala wins, overwhelmingly wins, if something happens between now and then and Kamala just overwhelmingly wins, the Democrats pull it off. It's an obvious win and there's no hanky-panky, anything going on. There's not going to be any violence. If they pull off all kinds of hanky-panky, do all kinds of things and win by a nose, and it's very obvious that things were done wrong and things were done illegally and all the things that happened in 2020, basically, they pull some shenanigans to pull this off. Or if they try to disqualify Donald Trump on January 6th, as Jamie Raskin would say, they're going to disqualify him under the 14th Amendment. Because, he's a constitutional scholar, which he's not. Again, this is these people who claim to be constitutional scholars. Joe Biden claims he taught constitutional law for years. I taught constitutional law for years. Oh, really? When was that? What college was that? Where did you teach that at? What kind of classes did you have? What was your curriculum? Where's your syllabus? He never taught that. He just rattles this stuff off. Just like Tim Walz does this kind of stuff all the time too. He just rattles things off and I get passionate about some things when I'm talking about things. He's just so passionate that he blames his lies and the stretching of the truth on his passion for talking about a particular subject, as if that's supposed to excuse him from saying those things. He won't just say, "Well, I'm sorry, I misspoke. I was wrong. Sorry, I misspoke on that. I got my dates wrong. I wasn't there at that time." You would think, in the middle of Tiananmen Square, when all the things are going down, the tanks are running down through the square there, and all the protests are going on, you would think you'd remember whether or not you were there during that time or not. Oh no, I was there later. Sorry, I was there after that was all over. That was several months later. I guess I wasn't there at the time. So you were just out there walking around with nothing going on, and you thought you were there during the. So this is the kind of stuff that the left says all the time. Now, one of the things, I was listening to Devin Gibson this morning. He's really good. He's a good brother, believer. He had this montage, this guy. He happened to be a black guy who has a show. He was going through a list, a litany of things that were, I'll probably play this tomorrow, all the things that Democrats have told them over the last few years, the last 4 years, not, let alone the last, more than that. The other 4 years we're told things for so long that were misinformation, and they're telling us that everything we're getting from Donald Trump is misinformation. Just on and on and on. There's a list of about 12 things that this guy went through. And then, of course, the reason that they're telling him he's supposed to vote for Kamala is because he's a black man. And it was very powerful, in my opinion. But it kind of shows some of the angst that's going on behind the scenes in the Democrat Party. There's some people their constituents are very tired of this kind of stuff, and so they're getting desperate, and they're coming out with more and more. Their lies are becoming much more prominent. They're saying things that obviously are much more just stretching truths and saying things. This whole thing about Donald Trump wants to get rid of the Constitution, wants to be a dictator on day one, wants to do all this, wants to be a dictator. He admires all these other dictators. He's blah, 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 blah. He wants to eliminate the Constitution. There's not going to be any more voting anymore. He's going to take all these things. He's going to take away your autonomy. He's going to ban abortion. It's going to be a national ban on abortion. It's going to be all these different things that they're saying is going to happen. And blah, blah, blah. And, of course, now there's talk of Trump and Kamala going on Joe Rogan. Now, my challenge to Joe Rogan, Joe Rogan's always, I don't want to help him. I don't want to help him. Really? So coming on your show would help him. So are you not going to ask him any questions? Are you not going to? So the things you don't like about him, are you going to challenge him on those things? And you're afraid he's going to answer the questions. You're afraid he's going to come out looking good on your show. That's what you're saying. You can't have an adversarial interview with Donald Trump and make him out, and expose him for the bad guy you say he is. Because you don't want to help him, because you think he's a bad guy, so you don't want to help him. Well, I would think if you're so smart, if you're so good at what you do, then you could make him, you could expose all these bad things that you think about him. So now my understanding is, I guess, now supposedly Donald Trump has said that he's supposed to be on Joe's show later this month. And I guess they're under some kind of negotiations at this point. And of course, that in the process is also now that puts out the invitation to Kamala. Now, Dave Ramsey had an interview with Trump, and it went really well. Of course, Ramsey's just the kind of guy you could just now. He's also wants to have an interview with Kamala. He's extended his they're in negotiations trying to find out if they can get an interview with Kamala. She will not do it. I guarantee you, she's not going to do that unless they just get Hail Married to the point where they just okay, we'll just do interviews with all these people and talk about how I was born, raised in a middle class family. You could just play a tape recorder and just get the same thing out of her that's going to get anywhere else. So this is where we're at now, that we got this this going on. But they're getting desperate. I think the people, the people behind the scenes, like the chunky Uyghurs, the people who are realizing that this, hey, this is not going well. They're not on the inside of decisions being made in the Democrat Party. They're not those kinds of insiders. My understanding is they're talking about airdropping Hillary Clinton back into the race somehow. They can't do that. It's just not going to work unless something drastic happens. You know, I mean, if Kamala steps down, maybe she's forced out by something. But obviously, Joe Biden is not so big on, he's actually not been very supportive of Kamala at this point. So that dynamic is very interesting as well. So we'll see how all this pans out. But my biggest concern is that desperate people do desperate things, and there's no end to what they will do because their end justifies the means with these people, and they'll do anything to win, and they don't care, and they will justify it by, well, because Orange Man bad, we had to protect democracy, so we had to subvert democracy in order to protect democracy, and they will think that that's the right thing to do. They'll think that they're doing the right thing and that that's the way you're supposed to be done. It's just, that's where these people are. They've convinced themselves so much that this Orange Man bad thing is real and he's an existential threat to our country. Existential means it would be eliminated. Our country would go, it would be dissolved and be gone. So we are in a very touchy time. Of course, the deep state feels threatened because they know that their days are numbered if he gets into office. There are some people who will, let's just say, not be so friendly to the deep state in the process of all this stuff. So, I digress. We have potential of a show tomorrow. Not sure how tomorrow is going to work out. We'll have to see how it goes. But the tomorrow and Friday, I have no idea where I will be. I'm hoping I will be possibly home, but most likely I will be doing the show from my car someplace in a parking lot tomorrow morning. Who knows? Not sure how it's all going to go. We'll figure it out as we go, but we'll just kind of take it as we go. In the meantime, folks, if I don't happen to have a show for the rest of the week, Shabbat Shalom, and just have a very blessed week, rest of your week. Hopefully, we continue to pray for our nation, pray for our leaders, pray for the safety of all involved on both sides, and hopefully we have a free and fair election, that the truth will be exposed, and the nefarious activity will be denied. God bless, folks. Have a great rest of your day.